I'm Dave King.
And I'm Alicia Reid. A very warm welcome to Unscripted, the official podcast of Rotary Magazine for Great Britain and Ireland. Coming off the back of the United Nations Climate Change Conference, otherwise known as COP30, in Brazil.
And we're going to be looking at Rotary's role in the environmental space, from global advocacy to grassroots action, and how Rotary can be a force for good at a time when climate and sustainability issues matter more than ever.
And we've got three brilliant guests who bring very different perspectives to the table.
And our first guest is Judith Diamond, who probably wears more hats than an ascot. She is a member of the Rotary Club of London, a former district governor, and is president-elect last week of her club. Professionally, she spent more than three decades in senior communications roles, including head of public relations at the Natural History Museum. Now, listen to this. Judith is also Rotary representative to the Commonwealth, and as dean of Rotary's representatives to the United Nations, has led delegations to COP26 in Glasgow, COP27, and COP28. She's nodding, so I've got it right, including Rotary's first ever pavilion at COP. And I've known Judith for quite a while, and she brings a global perspective, having worked on polio eradication advocacy for nearly 30 years, representing Rotary at the World Health Organization and beyond. Let's talk polio first of all, because last year was 40 years.
Yes, it's been a remarkable journey, and in 2026 I will have been involved for 30 years. I cannot believe it. Of course, with polio eradication being Rotary International's number one priority, I immediately got involved, and I had to work very closely with the Rotary International public relations team in Evanston in the US. So it was a very steep learning curve, but very exciting. It's been described as the model public-private partnership. As many projects, and it epitomises Rotary, the polio programme started as with a local club and district responding to a local community need. And in this case, it was 1979 when there was a huge outbreak of polio in the Philippines. So the Rotarians fundraised, they organised immunisation days, and they stopped polio in the Philippines. This, of course, was brought to the attention of the international president, who in 1985 announced that Rotary was going to eradicate polio in the world. I think they realised very quickly it was actually maybe taking on more than one organisation could achieve. So they then approached the World Health Assembly and asked them to come on board as partners. And that took 3 years. And the Global Polio Eradication Initiative started in 1988. And that was with the WHO, World Health Organization, UNICEF, and the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. And then, of course, in 2008, the Gates Foundation joined us. That was a wonderful partnership and continues today. And so this partnership has been working, as you say, since 1988. And we all have our specific roles. And I've just been at our International Polio Plus Committee meetings. We meet three times a year with all our partners. And it's at those meetings that we discuss all the grant applications from WHO and UNICEF that Rotary funds. So each meeting we are discussing and agreeing. So yesterday we agreed $50 million for WHO and UNICEF grants. It's everything to do with the polio program. Mm-hmm. So it could be funding staff, it could be funding vehicles. It's generally not funding the vaccines because UNICEF, that's UNICEF's responsibility. But having said that, of course, you may remember in the terrible war in Gaza, there was a polio outbreak and the Rotary trustees responded immediately, separate to our $50 million, and immediately gave $5 million for vaccines for Gaza and stopped the WHO and UNICEF obviously implemented it. But Rotary funded the vaccines in that case. It's been very heartening the last 2 days attending the polio committee meetings. You can really see the trend going down, the number of cases going down. The experts at WHO have seen the trends, of course, in other countries, particularly India. And there is a cycle that you can see. Okay, it'll go down in Nigeria. You may remember we had no cases for 2 years and then suddenly six cases appear. So there is a sort of, it's cyclical. But you can see the trend. And I'm very optimistic that we will achieve eradication in the next couple of years.
Because we had Dr. Jamal Ahmed, who came on our podcast in October, and he was, do you remember, he was quite upbeat, wasn't he, about the way things were looking in terms of polio.
Very positive.
Yeah, he was reporting yesterday at our meeting.
Was he indeed?
Yes, yeah. And it really is going in the right direction. And of course, the other issue is the circulating vaccine-derived cases, and particularly in Africa. And they have also gone down dramatically this year. But there are far too many, and we've got to stop them.
Yeah.
And we will.
So let's move the conversation slightly to environment. And you are involved with the action group, the Environmental Rotary Action Group, known as ESRAG. How did that all come about?
Well, I was in 2012... doing advocacy for the polio programme, I suggested to Rotary International that we should be working much closer with the Commonwealth, because it's 56 countries. It's like a mini UN. Yeah. And in 2012, they appointed me Rotary's representative to the Commonwealth. I'm still the representative. Yeah, well, it's part of the Rotary representative to the UN and international agencies.
Yeah.
So the Commonwealth is one of the international agencies.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that for 12 years. And I was then, in 2020, I was invited to be the dean of the Rotary Representative Network to the UN and international agencies. We had 30 Rotary ambassadors in UN agencies and international agencies. And they're all appointed by the president, and they all have professional public affairs, government relations experience. And in fact, indeed, some of them have actually been ambassadors for their countries. Walter Geiger, for example, in Switzerland, had been, you know, he was a full-time professional ambassador, and he was Rotary representative to the UN in Geneva. So there's this wonderful group of ambassadors, and I was invited to be the chair, which is called the dean. And it's interesting, I remember saying at the time, why is it called the dean? And it's because, and last week, our speaker at the Rotary Club in London was the dean of the diplomatic corps in London.
Okay.
He was the Rotary Club ambassador to Honduras. And so Rotary was following what the diplomatic corps does. Mm. So the chair of the ambassadors is called the dean. Anyway, so I was dean of the representative network, and that was in 2020. In 2021, the Glasgow COP was being held. And so I was invited by the president. The COP conferences are the biggest UN events in the world. So, and we felt we needed a presence there as part of our UN group. And so the president asked me to lead a delegation. And the president was Sheikh Mehta. And he agreed to come for 2 days if I could organise a meaningful meeting. So I worked with the Secretary General of the Commonwealth, Patricia Scotland. They had a pavilion. And we organised a roundtable discussion on mangroves. I had 10 environment ministers there from the Commonwealth, Secretary General, our president, and about 6 experts. And at the end of that meeting, President Shaker said to my... I picked him up at the airport and I said, I really want to achieve something out of this today. I don't want to just be a talking shop. I said, we've got to get some action. And I said, I'd be happy if we could, say, may do mangrove projects in 2 or 3 of the countries where I knew we had some impetus. At the end of the meeting, he said, I'm pledging Rotary... It was a really good meeting. He said, I'm pledging Rotary to do mangrove projects in all 10 countries. Going back to the airport, he said to me, I want you to organise it. I want to be able to report on it in June next year at my Houston convention.
Wow.
No pressure. But, of course, the power of Rotary. We have experts on everything all around the world. And I've been around a long time, so I'm lucky enough to know a lot of these people. So I immediately contacted our mangroves expert, Dr. Chris Puttock, who immediately took it on. And to date, we've had... And President Shaker did report on it in Houston. I was there. And to date, we've got mangrove projects in 36 mangrove projects in 26 countries, supported by global grants and Rotary in excess of $2 million.
And just for the science point of view, why are mangroves so important?
They're very important. First of all, they stop sea incursions, so stops erosion and stops flooding. Secondly, mangrove trees take up the largest amount of carbon dioxide of any tree. So they're very important for absorbing carbon dioxide. Thirdly, and equally important, they are the nurseries for fish. So no mangroves, the fish have got nowhere to lay their eggs.
Mm.
And then there is a fourth benefit as well. Wherever you have mangroves, they're flowering trees, you have bees. And so you have a honey production, so there's an economic element as well. So they're really, really important. And the latest one that we worked on was last October, a year ago, for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Samoa. 8 weeks before the meeting, and I've been going to those since 2015, doing advocacy for the polio program. But of course, it's like COPs and UN conferences. It covers a whole raft of areas of focus. And 8 weeks before going, I was requested by the King's private secretary to initiate a mangroves project in Samoa as a legacy for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. And I again worked with Dr. Chris Puttock, because he now is retired in Hawaii, which was very fortuitous, because Samoa is a long way from London. It's a 35-hour journey. But Chris was able to go there. And I managed to raise about $40,000. And, of course, the power of Rotary again. I immediately contacted Ian Risley, past president in Australia, because mm-hmm. I knew he would know everybody in the Pacific and who I could go to. He immediately put me in touch and told me there was one Rotary club in Samoa. So I contacted them, very small club. I'm not sure they quite knew what hit them, but they were there. They were our local agent on the ground. And this is, again, the power of Rotary. We are everywhere. And we worked very closely with the ministry, because they had to designate where they wanted the mangroves restoration to be. Chris Puttock was able to go out, which was very important, because we had to sign all, the Rotary Club had to sign memorandums of understanding with the ministry. But more importantly, so the ministry decided on this village, Salemoa, with 300 villagers. And Chris had to go out when he was there. He was there for a week prior to the conference. And he had to go to the a meeting where the 18 elders of the village agreed that we could do this. And the ceremony, they were sitting around in a circle, all with grass skirts. And of course, Chris had a, coming from Hawaii, he had his grass skirt with him. And they pass around this huge bowl, wooden bowl, with a coconut half cup in it, and you take a sip. And they actually gave me one of these when I was in Samoa when we launched the mangroves. I mean, it's hardwood, it's incredibly heavy. I had to buy a case to bring it home. I said to Chris, I said, gosh, what's the drink like? He said, well, I think he said, people describe it as liquid cannabis.
Oh, wow.
He said, look, they're all high. And they were doing this for 3 hours, but Chris was just pretending he didn't actually take it in. But it was fascinating. And on the day we launched it, I mean, it was just memorable.
And this is the power of Rotary, in basically being able to make change in that way.
Absolutely, yes. And because the King was involved, I was working with the Foreign Office and with the Cabinet Office, you know, weekly, daily meetings. And I managed to get a donation of £5,000 from the Commonwealth Human Ecology Council. I happened to be at a Commonwealth meeting talking about the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting and what we were all going to be doing. And so I say, well, I'm trying to do a mangroves project, but, you know, I'm looking for funding. We go out afterwards and we had a cup of coffee, and one of the guys comes up to me and he said, I might be able to give you some money. Anyway, we got £5,000.
Wow.
And that was the catalyst. Once you've got one donation.
Yeah.
And then the Foreign Office introduced me to the Sustainable Markets Initiative, which the King started about 5 or 6 years ago, very successful, bringing together chief executives from all around the world committed to working on environmental projects. So they gave us a donation, and the rest I raised from Rotary clubs and Rotary districts, calling up friends for favours. And so we did that.
I have to ask about the King, because the King is an honorary Rotarian.
He is, yes.
So what's his view on Rotary? What's his view on Rotary and the environment?
Well, the environment. The King is passionate about the environment, absolutely passionate about the environment. And, of course, before going to London, I was a member of the Rotary Club of Windsor St George.
Yeah.
And Prince Philip was an honorary member there. And he used to come regularly. Every year we'd have one or two meetings with Prince Philip.
So he toasted his wife then?
Yeah, he was very passionate about the environment and conservation as well. Mm. But, of course, he was patron of the World Wildlife Fund.
Of course.
Yeah. And of course, King Charles got that from his father. But Charles is very, very committed to the environment. And so we launched it on the Thursday morning, and we had 300 villagers. They were all dressed the same in this beautiful Samoan batik cloth. They'd been rehearsing dances and songs, and we also had a Commonwealth Youth Choir came and performed from Perth. They were all disadvantaged young people, and there's a Commonwealth music group, and the lady in London tutored them online, and one of the members wrote the song, and students from the Yehudi Menuhin school, they did the score of music. And so they came to the launch of our mangroves. But we also had a reception at a new science centre in Samoa. And they came and performed there as well. It was wonderful. Wow. The afternoon that we launched the mangroves, we had a reception with the King. And President Gordon McAnally was there, and Chris Puttock and myself. And when the King came to me, I've met him obviously quite a lot of times because we have these Commonwealth receptions every year in Commonwealth Week. And so I said to him, "Your Majesty," I said, "I just want to tell you three things," because you get 2 seconds with him, you know. I said, "First of all, we launched the Mangroves Project this morning." He grabbed me. "Oh, you did it," he said. I said, "Of course we did it. We're Rotary." And then I said, "I also want to tell you that last week I was chairing a conference at the Guildhall in London launching seagrass restoration projects in the Thames Estuary. And our club has just raised £36,000 for that."
Wow, Rotary Club of London.
Yes, with the Rotary, the Thames Yacht, Royal Thames Yacht Club. Mm-hmm. It's there. They've got a 100th or 150th anniversary and they wanted to mark it. So we persuaded them to join us. And so that's the first phase, really. It's part of a big project that the Zoological Society of London, ZSL, are doing called Transforming the Thames. Really, really important. And again, the seagrasses you need for oysters. So they'll be able to restore the oyster industry there. And of course, it cleans the water as well. The oysters clean the water. So I told him that. But then I said, the third thing, and the most important, is we want Commonwealth support for polio eradication in the communique on Saturday. Of course, is it? On Saturday, we got it.
Judith, you are a lady of influence. Thank you for that. And we will come back with some more because some fascinating tales there. Alicia, what do you think of that?
Well, I always said I'd love to have the King on this unscripted. Maybe we can organise that, do you think? Yeah, that would be wonderful. But Judith, thank you so much. I could listen to your stories forever. Stay with us as we move on over to the Netherlands now to meet our second guest, Gert-Jan van Dommelen. Dommelen.
Hello.
Sorry, good I think evening. I said your surname incorrectly.
No, you're doing wonderful.
Oh, thank you very much. Gert-Jan is a Rotarian and co-founder of End Plastic Soup, the Rotary-led initiative tackling plastic pollution, which now operates as the Plastics Task Force within ESRAG. ESRAG, we've mentioned earlier, that stands for the Environmental Sustainability Rotary Action Group. End Plastic Soup was founded in 2018 and has grown into a global movement working with Rotary clubs, Rotaractors and partners to address plastic pollution on land, in rivers and in our oceans. Gert-Jan has been a key voice in reframing the plastic pollution not just as an environmental issue, but as a health, economic and systems challenge, and crucially, one where local action can scale globally, as we were hearing earlier from the Polio Project that started as a local club project. Gert-Jan, welcome to Unscripted.
Yes, thank you, and appreciate to be here with you.
It's wonderful that you can join us, and a lot of people talk about their passions. When did your passion for plastic, it's more of an anti-plastic passion, isn't it? When did that start?
Well, my passion started with Rotary, first of all, as Hurricane Irma hit St. Martin, one of the Caribbean islands, and we raised, within 4 weeks, €43,000, and that turned out to become a global grant of $340,000. And we are very looking forward to the decision that that school that was destroyed will be rebuilt, and the tender is going to be approved this month, so even before Christmas. And that's wonderful because then we can look at the next step, rebuilding the school for the children over there. And we were so successful and so energized that we said we want to do something on the environment, and the environment is broad. And so we had lots of discussions about flying less and eating less meat. And then somebody said, well, we don't like that plastic pollution out there, do we? And everybody agreed. So since then, 80 years now, we have found that all cultures, all countries, all generations have the same opinion. We do not want plastic pollution in the environment. And that's how it started. And now it's turned out into a global movement in 66 countries where we still see the same. And we collaborate and we meet many, many people every day in multiple Zoom online meetings. And that's just hit my passion, to talk to these people and to have the same opinion, whether you're left-wing or right-wing, whether you're European or whatever. Everybody wants the same, and that's a wonderful feeling.
And it does affect every single one of us, doesn't it? And, you know, I look down at what I'm wearing now, and I see plastic everywhere, even down to the pattern on my T-shirt. It's probably plastic. So, and the little lights that we've got here in the studio, it's plastic. Christmas, everything's plastic.
Yep,
so when we look at that situation then, we all know that this is a problem, but it's all around us. How do you enthuse people to even get started on something that feels so much bigger than what we are?
Well, first of all, we are not against plastic. We could even say, on the opposite, plastic is fantastic. Yeah, we can make wonderful things with it. It's really durable, it's cheap, it's light, and we can only imagine what the world would be like without plastic. So it's really a wonderful material. However, we have such too much of it, and we produce many so-called single-use plastics, plastic that you buy and throw away after use. And we never realized how many single-use plastic things there are, but half of the plastic is single-use. And the average lifetime of a single-use plastic that's being used is 40 seconds. You cannot believe it. Half of the plastic has a lifetime of 40 seconds. And then after that, it's a lifetime of thousands of years when you do not destroy it. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that the microplastics make it really a problem, because it's not just about the waste you see, about maybe animals eating some plastic bag. The micro and nanoplastics are a real problem for us and a threat for our health and our hormone system. And these microplastics are everywhere in the products. And we have to find out what are the additives that make these plastics wrong for us, and how can we find alternatives. And that's a really challenge worldwide to solve that.
Do you think we are progressing in a meaningful way towards that solution on multiple levels of the different plastics?
Well, we are not. Not yet. But that's where Rotary comes in. We try to get that job done, meaning that we are also influencing the plastic treaty, which was discussed for 4 years by the United Nations, that failed in Geneva in early August. So we said, well, let's start again. With the 120 countries of the willing, most countries have the same opinion, they want the same things. And those countries that are opposed to this, have oil values, have businesses that we want to protect. So we are not against them, we just want to find a solution for that. And I think many, many countries want the same thing. And we can get that those 120 countries of the willing to sign a treaty that is a signal for all the rest of us. And that really helps us to find alternatives, do more research, do something on the healthcare, because it's really frightening what's happening.
It is totally terrifying when you think that it's actually affecting not only us, but all levels of life. And of course, as an ecosystem, that's a massive problem, isn't it? So
yes, the microplastics are really hitting us in the hormone system and our functionality and our health. And that's true for all life on our planet. So we see, of course, the mangrove trees are very important, like we just heard. But the trees, all of the green, totally, just eats up 20% of the carbon dioxide. 60% comes from the oceans and 20% from the soil. And that's where you see the problem happening. Not just the trees and the green, with less photosynthesis, but also the plankton in the oceans, who hit for 95% of all the carbon dioxide absorption, and the fungi in the soil, and they're all hit by these microplastics, and they all have about 13% less absorption capabilities, leading to tremendous problems for the biodiversity, but also for crops. Our worldwide crops in grain, rice, vegetables, fruits have decreased with 20%. That's more than the hunger in the world. And that we have caused that ourselves. So, right. Yes, it's important.
So now that End Plastic Soup is SRAG's task force, so again, here's this SRAG coming back again. What changed for you when that became official with Rotary?
I think that the most important thing is that we have now a line towards the Rotary International top layer, where we were a bottom-up initiative by about 1,000 clubs worldwide. That felt great, and you can do so much locally, but in the end, you need certain countries to participate, and the Rotary label there, the Rotary support of that, is so important for countries like India or Philippines. Or Nigeria, they see hierarchy, you have to earn it. And if you're not part of the system, then you have really a nightmare to get those countries involved. And that's now really happening. So we see the change there in India, in Nigeria, and we really see an extension of our network.
Local level, what advice would you have for a club who is enthused by listening to you here on the podcast and they think, yes, we'd like to do more in this area? How should they go about it?
Well, the local community is the base, yeah? Your neighbours, your family, everybody you know. And with those people, you make the change. And if you then are supported with materials, with knowledge, with data, ideas, inspiration, then you can act. And the second thing is, of course, you're part of this network, and a local club should not just focus on their own community, but also open up to the outside world. It helps you to gain membership, because people like clubs that are open, that are inspirational to them, that they can learn something from, and you do that by opening the doors. And that's what we have been doing all the time. And I think that's something we can really use to the best of Rotary International. And it also helps us to do projects together. We have about 30 education and implementation projects, sometimes big ones. And you need access to clubs to get the money, but also to actually do something. And when people feel owned by a problem and by a solution, you get a tremendous energy from that, and miracles then happen every day.
Exactly. So there's a global energy with Rotary, isn't it? As Judith was saying, our trust, our influence, and our skills as Rotarians and the experience is just phenomenal. So what does this look like in a Rotary context, really, from your perspective then? What do you hope for, let's say, in 5 years' time?
Well, we have a strategy for the next 25 years, and in the next 10 years, we want to grow to 8,000 clubs that are action, which is tremendous. It's 25% at that time, we think, of all the clubs, and that's a kind of tipping point. So the 25% is something, when you get a change, you can then help everybody to follow. And we want to have this to happen in hospitals, we want this to happen in schools, we want this to happen in communities, and of course in Rotary as well. And then everybody will see the benefits of doing something about this plastic pollution problem, not just for the environment, not just for how things look like, but also for health and the biodiversity of our nature and our life on the planet.
Exactly. And Judith, is there something that you would like to ask Jan about the project that he's heading at the moment?
Yes, I mean, I'm very aware of End Plastic Soup, and I've heard Gert speak many times. Gert, I'm interested in what you might be doing with regard to stopping pollution, plastic pollution of the oceans. I'm very concerned about conserving the oceans because it's absolutely critical. And of course, you must be aware that National Geographic recently, this year, had a new launched a new film called Oceans, scripted and presented by Sir David Attenborough. And I was fortunate enough to go to the premiere in May. The King was there with Sir David Attenborough. It's a very important initiative. It's called Revive Our Oceans. And we've got a proposal in from the organisers for Rotary to partner with them. And but I'm mentioning that because when we were at COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, the COP's a two-week event, and you have one day off in the middle. So the day we had free in the middle, which was a Sunday, we went out along the coast to the Red Sea to look at the mangroves. All along the coast there was the most horrendous plastic pollution. And the Rotary Club of Sharm el-Sheikh, they were with us, they said, yeah, they go out regularly, picking up sacks and sacks and sacks of rubbish, plastic rubbish. And they're saying it's all coming off the cargo ships that go through the Red Sea. Since then, in the last 6 months, I've also read reports that the Galapagos Islands, which I was fortunate enough to go to 15 years ago, and we went to all 11 of the 12 islands, you didn't see plastic pollution, you didn't see any pollution. All you saw were the wonderful animals, and you could see why Darwin did his theory of evolution. Today, the Galapagos Islands are suffering from plastic pollution from Chinese cargo ships. It's horrendous. So it's all over the world. Is End Plastic Soup doing anything with the marine industry?
Yes.
We had in London the International Maritime Organization.
Yeah.
And I was at a meeting recently where the CEO was at, actually. And I think it's something we ought to take up with them. Are you doing anything in that area?
Well, we have a slogan, it's a motto. It's called Start Today, Step by Step, and Do It Together. So we need all the alliances. We also need the patience to honor and to celebrate every step. That's one thing. So things will not happen overnight. But we are now in the 2021 to 2030 ocean decade of the United Nations. This decade, I should say, in Europe, in the European Union, Germany is the leading country. And the chair of the German party is Maria Rietveld from our board of End Plastic Soup, which is not just a coincidence. Yeah, so we help there and we are pretty much involved. Second is, I believe that education will be the prime topic for everybody to change this world. The young people will make the difference. And so we spend time on this in our education packages, also together in Great Britain and the Commonwealth for with CAP, the Kids Against Plastic Initiative of Amy and Alamik. And we see that young people can make a difference. Our Nina in Java, Indonesia, just came in second on the International Children's Peace Prize 2025, the highest prize award a child can get in this world. And it was celebrated in Stockholm in Sweden just 2 weeks ago. And we nominated her, and I'm very proud that she became that important. She is also working on stopping the export of plastic waste. And then we go out to the fishermen to train the fishermen not to leave their nets in sea, but also to bring them ashore and learn about what to do. And for example, we have one nice project in Italy on the west coast, where harbors have been honored with a small building where fishermen can leave their nets when they're broken, can leave their valuable stuff, and also can leave their waste. And the community, the municipal, takes away the waste. And this prevents them from putting it at sea or at the beach where it's forbidden. So this is a nice global grant project that Rotary did. And that has also given us a lot of emphasis. We're doing research in the oceans in Spain and in Portugal. We just have to do only not the Azores and Madeira. And it's a really tremendous research that we're doing together with universities to find out more about the microplastics. And in May, we have the big first week of the Mediterranean Sea without plastic, done by 15 countries of Rotary, all along the Mediterranean, up to Tunisia and Morocco and Egypt and Turkey, etc., and all the Balkan islands, countries, sorry for my English. And we think we can really celebrate it. The big event will be during the All-Italian Conference in Firenze in May, and then in 2027, even bigger in Sicily. And these are things that we are doing about the oceans. And last is we're working together with alliances. Like with Endpolio now, we cannot do this alone. We have to work together, but also all these alliances, like the Ocean Cleanup for the Oceans with and the Plastic Soup Foundation, and the big initiatives that are around the world. And together with the International Yachting Fellowship of Rotarians, that has all the yachting people and the big marine ships and all the connections in Ukraine, in the Philippines, and in Italy, we definitely have an influence on the elements of the sea. But I'm very interested to extend that network with anything that helps.
Okay, yeah, and that's fantastic. Thank you very much for that. That is just an impressive list that you rolled off. And while you were chatting there, Shirley, who is clearly got an eye on television, on the later TV dramas, there's a drama on the BBC called The War Between the Land and Sea. I don't know if that's available in Holland. I've not seen it, I'm afraid. But it's apparently it's the first TV drama where sea creatures are rebelling against humans and throwing plastics back from where they came from and sort of demanding environmental change. So maybe that's a vision for the future.
It is, definitely, yes.
Anyway, Gillian, thank you very much, and please stay with us. We'll come back for a conversation with Judith as well. But our third guest brings us right down to club level with an example of environmental action which any club could replicate.
Is a member of Henley Rotary Club and has been instrumental in developing Henley's environmental programme, including the Henley Plastic Blitz and the brilliantly named Rotary Talks Rubbish initiative. Working with partners such as Thames 21, Phil and his club have combined river cleanups with citizen science, data collection, and public education, and all of this is helping people to understand not just what litter is being found, but why it's there in the first place. It's a practical, visible Rotary in action, and it's having real impact locally. Welcome, Phil, to Unscripted.
Thank you very much, Alicia and David.
Thinking about the local level, like polio, like Judith mentioned, starting really locally, and this is what Gert Yen was saying as well, it's local, isn't it? How do you find that your locality needs this work done?
Well, we started in 2021 with a river cleanup, and that allowed us to work out how to do a river cleanup. We now call that particular event the pilot. And from that, we built up a website which tells clubs how to safely do a cleanup on the riverside, on the banks, and in the river, perhaps. And the big word that encompasses everything we're doing is awareness. We're making people, companies, hopefully governments, aware of the problem, as Gert Jan has illustrated. It's a huge problem. Anyway, we organized the cleanup. It was very successful, very exciting. We got huge amounts of rubbish out of the river and from the banks, and realized we had something. Then we found out that Thames 21 was doing a very similar event that they called Plastic Blitz. So the following year we joined them, and it's been known as the Plastic Blitz since, and it's now accomplished 5 years a successful cooperation. And we are now cleaning up the River Thames from the source to the sea between us. And in our Rotary district, the Thames Valley, we are probably got 12 plus clubs involved. But more importantly, as we've noticed that other social organisations, other community organisations are joining in. So the clubs are working with other people. Those people are doing their own thing and is spreading. And we've noticed in Henley, particularly, the amount of rubbish we collect on each year when we do this is reducing. And we think this is because we believe, we like to believe, that we're creating awareness. We've even noticed that the Henley Royal Regatta now do a river cleanup following the regatta. So and then there's the Henley Wombles. There's so many different organisations doing cleanups. So we think that's a success, that we don't find very much rubbish when we do our plastic blitz.
What sort of items do you find?
Oh, it's unbelievable. The worst things are probably cigarette butts, because there's a lot of plastic, microplastic, in those cigarette butts. And so it's instantly diluted into the water. And how do you get rid of that? Is the biggest problem. But as Gert-Jan said, single-use plastics, wrappers to ice creams, wrappers to chocolate bars, so many things. Also bottles, plastic bottles, plastic cups, plastic cutlery, which has now been banned. Food outlets cannot use plastic cutlery. So, you know, it's all having an effect, and people are learning from it and reducing plastic.
Can I just ask, Gert-Jan, is this typical of what you find in rivers around the world, or is this in some way worse than what you find?
No, it's similar. Every country has its own specific customs or products, you can say. Like we use bottles in Europe that we do not need. We can use or bring your own bottle or whatever. But in Ghana, for example, they use sachets, half-liter sachets that people sell. You can buy them from women that wear them on their head with ice in it, etc. And these sachets are everywhere. So it's different products, but similar to what Phil said.
Thank you. With Phil, with the plastic blitz, tell me, what is a plastic blitz day like?
What's the day like? Well, a little group turn up at the riverside, put up our gazebo, which is very colourful, says Rotary in Henley on Thames, Rotary in the Thames Valley. And then we've organised with various helpers the day to come down. We've hired litter pickers and get the rubbish sacks from the local authority, who are very, very supportive and very keen. And then we have had people in canoes. We've had Henley Sea Cadets who have been out on the river. There's an IOT or island in the middle of the river at Henley. People live on that island, and two or three of those people who are used to the river, and they get in their boats and they whiz up and down and they collect water, rubbish directly out of the river. Canoeists are very useful because they can go into the reeds, and they can't collect big stuff, you know, but they can get small parts, and if they see anything big, they can report it, and then someone in a boat can go down and fetch it. So it's a collective day, and then we bring back, and then the important part of a plastic blitz with Thames 21 is to do an analysis. So we take an area, not the whole lot, but to take an area that we can measure, tip out all the rubbish, and then segregate it into, you know, plastic cups, cutlery, cigarette butts, bottle tops, bottles, etc., etc., and then count it. And that information is part of the citizen science study, and it has been fed into a European-wide study on the rubbish that's going into our rivers. So that's a very important aspect of the Thames 21 Plastic Blitz.
Yes, and with plastic pollution, we often do think of the oceans, don't we? But of course, the rivers feed into the oceans, and this is what your experience there in Henley.
That's where it starts. Judith mentioned the rubbish going into the seaside on the Galapagos or in the South Seas. That starts off in Asia, where the people haven't got the infrastructure to handle waste, and it just gets thrown into the river. We've all seen, Gert and I have certainly seen photographs of rivers that you could almost walk across on the rubbish.
So going forward, Phil, on your Plastic Blitz Day, do you give advice to the local community?
By example, and as I say, other people have caught on and done their own plastic cleanups, and that's what we're about, the awareness. We've also been in the town centre with our gazebo and did a demonstration of rubbish and how to handle it, where to put your rubbish, in which bin to be collected by the local council. And we called that Rotary Talks Rubbish, which was a good strap line, a little bit amusing, and it got people talking to us. And there we learned particularly that children, little children, going to junior schools, they were more informed than their parents, which is great because they will grow and they will pass on that knowledge. We then followed that up with another one, again, gazebo in the town centre, Rotary Talks Alternatives to Plastic, where we were showing how you can not use plastic utensils, you can use bamboo plates, picnic plates, bamboo knives and forks, bamboo toothbrushes, all this sort of thing, and gave examples of it. And then we followed that up with another visit to the town centre with the gazebo at Christmas time, and we called that Rotary Wraps Up Christmas. And there we were demonstrating how you needn't use wrapping paper with sparkly glitter on and plastic wrapping paper, aluminium coated wrapping paper. All these are horrible things, single use, and as Gert Jan said, takes 400 years plus to degrade. But you can use paper and you can make it look pretty with ribbon or with a paper ribbon. You can even use paper from a magazine, which is colourful, and it still makes a very presentable present. And the same with decorations. So for 2 years running, there's been a little display in the local St Mary's Church in Henley, and about 20 little Christmas trees all decorated by various groups, and we've done one, an environmental one. And other than the lights, we're all biodegradable or paper or recyclable. It's making people aware. That's the name of the game.
Phil, can I just jump in, because I want to just pick up on the point you made there about children. I'm going to ask Judith first, but I'd like to get Gert Jan and your own thought there. But why do you think the environment represents an opportunity, a major opportunity for Rotary?
Children, young people, are really aware of the impact of climate change, and it's of great concern to them. And so we should be getting that message out to them, that Rotary has an area of focus. We're working across all these different areas. And the Rotary Action Group for Environmental and Sustainability It has 13 chapters around the world. We have eight or nine task forces covering all different aspects. And so there's something that's very appealing to them, something they can relate to. And we've certainly found that in the London district with our seagrass projects. You know, road tractors are interested in getting involved in it. And they worry about the future, quite rightly. You know, what's going to happen to the world? They see temperatures rising every year. We're seeing floods and hurricanes and cyclones and torrential rain. And, you know, communities are affected by it, so they can actually see it happening, as we all can.
Gert-Jan, do you think there's enough awareness in the Netherlands amongst school children of the environmental issues?
No, the problem is the same everywhere. And what we see in, that it's really important for the young people to understand that we have ideas how to come in action, what they can do themselves, and also to show perspective. People like to see and like to dream about their future. And that's what we need to show them. And it's there. It's all possible. But we now have so much doom thinking in our world, and war and violence and all these bad stories going on. We need to show them what is positive. And we can give that perspective. We see it happen in many, many countries where you have young people, like in Africa. They all jump on this. They see this as their future. They see what we can do together. And I think that's wonderful. I get a lot of energy from that.
And Phil, just to ask yourself about the Plastic Blitz, have you seen any sort of membership drive, any sort of boost to membership? Because you're clearly putting yourself out in the community. Are people coming back to you and saying we want to be a part of Rotary, either as a direct Rotarian or perhaps a friend of Rotary?
Yes, I told you about the gazebo in the town centre. At least two of those events, we've gained members from those efforts. In fact, our current president, 3 or 4 years ago, was one of those people that joined us following our efforts in Rotary Talks Rubbish. But we've also worked with schools in the town. We supplied rubbish bins, and we encouraged asked the children to design a poster for the rubbish bin, and the winner was then put on the bin, and we went down there, and the children actually ran an assembly. We didn't do anything; we were just there. And it was fantastic seeing these youngsters doing the selling for us. But that was to encourage them to not drop their rubbish, to put it in the bin and put it in the right bin. What can be recycled, what cannot be recycled? It was very rewarding.
When we think about Rotary clubs, I would say in the UK at least, most Rotary clubs have got litter picking equipment. And I think we've all done it. Have you done it, Dave?
I've done it.
I actually find it quite satisfying to go around picking up the litter.
Gert-Jan does it. And Gert-Jan, if you don't mind me saying, you basically organise it and then you let the children get on with it. Am I right?
Yes, well, we even have in Holland now, we have children climate mayors. So instead of the senior mayor, you know, that runs the town, we have children doing that. And it's wonderful. They do the job for us. Yeah, they can better tell the story than we can. And they're 9 or 10 years old. It's really wonderful. We are doing a project now in September next year. Mm. It's called the River Cleanup Europe. And we're doing this in 45 rivers already and more to follow. And it's done in joint cooperation with River Cleanup in Belgium, with the Maas Cleanup in Holland and the Rhine Cleanup in Germany. All across, also including the River Danube. And this will happen in the 12th of September. And I think the cleaning the rivers is awareness, but it also helps. It's like cleaning the beach. If it doesn't flow up to a deeper ocean, you do a good job, and it's wonderful.
And we will probably get involved with that, Jan. Thames 21 are having funding problems, and it looks as if they may not be able to run the Plastic Blitz next year. But we need a funds from somewhere, if anybody knows a pot of money, to help Thames 21 continue, because we're spreading this out around Rotary, GB and I. A number of clubs all over the country have got involved, and it'd be sad to see that fade away.
Phil, we've got Judith in the room. She's the master wheeler dealer of getting money from anyone from the King down. So I think if you want to have a conversation, Judith's your lady.
Could I just make a comment about Gert Van's project launching in September across Europe? Is that part of the Rotary International Community's challenge with United Nations Environment Programme? Because we've got a memorandum of understanding to clean up rivers. So is that part of it?
Yes, it is. Like that part of that programme. The Mediterranean Sea, and this one is two projects that we organize across the world, now in Europe, with the Community Action for Freshwater Initiative at the UN.
Can I just make a comment about membership and how important the environment is as well? And especially for the COPs, you mentioned that we went to COP28. We had our own pavilion. We ran 28 breakout sessions, and we had about 100 speakers, top international speakers. Several of them have joined Rotary, including the trustee of Sandams, who joined the Rotary Club of London about a month ago. She was one of our speakers. Wow. So it just shows there's definitely a membership spin-off. They get inspired and want to work with us. But the other point I wanted to make about COP28, for the first time, UNFCCC recognised that climate change affects every UN SDG. And so we had breakout sessions on health, on urban design, transport, oceans, conservation, endangered species, renewable energy, peace. We had a whole day on peace and how climate change impacts that. So it impacts everything. That's why it's so important. And I'd like to encourage every club in Great Britain to become a member of ESRAG, and also individual Rotarians to become members of the Environment Sustainability Rotary Action Group. There are chapters, and there is a chapter for Great Britain and Ireland, which you can belong to and become active and expand what we're doing.
Just thinking about one more call to action, Phil, is there one thing that you can advise every person to do today that will make a difference to the plastic pollution?
If you see any rubbish, pick it up, put it in a bin.
Simple. Gert-Jan, what about you?
Buy quality textile. So don't buy the plastic textile rubbish from China, from Shein, etc. That's really happening to a lot of young people nowadays. In Christmas time, they have all this plastic textile. You can wear it 2, maybe 3 times, and then it's gone. And it's throwing the microplastics all over the place in the wind and in the air. Don't buy it.
I'd also add, buy local. I hate it when I go into Waitrose and I see beans in November that have flown in from Kenya. It's absurd. We've got vegetables in this country that grow in the winter. We're not eating seasonally. And I came from a farming family in Wales, so I always eat seasonally. I never buy strawberries at Christmas. Mm. Strawberries, you know, they come out in May, June, July. So buy local.
So as Father Time checks his watch, taps it impatiently and points meaningfully at the studio clock, we're forced once again to bring this episode of Unscripted to a close. My thanks to Judith Diamond, to Gert-Jan van Domelen and to Phil Fletcher for 3 thoughtful, challenging and inspiring conversations.
Poetic since the last podcast.
I'm trying. Nan has made me be more poetic.
Oh, thanks as ever to Shirley at Swindon 105.5 for keeping us on the straight and narrow, and to you, our listeners. You can find previous episodes where you can also get poetic yourself of Unscripted wherever you found this one, covering everything from polio to peace, sport and of course to poetry.
And I know on this podcast we spoke about Gordon McAnally, and Gordon McAnally was our previous podcast, also Dr. Jamal Ahmed from the World Health Organization, so we had them on the podcast. But what about what's coming up in the future? Well, I can tell you that we've got Francesco Arezzo, the president of Rotary International, who's going to be with us in 2026, which we're really looking forward to. But in our next episode, we will be having another strong lineup that includes Mukesh Malhotra from the Hounslow Club and Suzanne Ray. They are the founders of a fantastic initiative called the World Greatest Meal, and Suzanne will be joining us, I think, about 6 o'clock in the morning her time, live from Australia.
And from all of us here,
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year in Dutch.
Gelukkig nieuwjaar.
Tot ziens.
Tot ziens.
Lois and Noah's Ark.
Wow.
What's it in Swindon?
Happy New Year. You've been listening to Unscripted, the official podcast for Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland. If you'd like to find out more about Rotary or join us, visit rotarygbi.org. You can also read more stories in the Rotary magazine at magazine.rotarygbi.org. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then why not leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps to spread the word. And we'd love you to share this podcast with friends, family and colleagues, inside and outside of Rotary. You can also email comments or suggestions to editor@rotarygbi.org. This podcast has been recorded at the studios of Swindon 105.5.